serves. This is Sir Gene with your morning update in the afternoon.
This is Sir Gene, and joining me is Dude Named Ben Named Ben.
Well,
and
what, Dude Named Ben Named Ben Defender Megawatts.
That's even fuller name. That's good. And you even have an email address that corresponds to that.
Dude@namedben.com.
Yeah, dude@namedben.com, which is great. So I guess, would you be willing to forward for somebody dudette@namedben.com?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, so anyone step right that up, dudettes. You get a free forward.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's great. How have you been, Ben?
Oh, fuck, this has been a week, man.
Yeah?
I was in Baltimore all week for a company on site, which was good in a lot of ways and bad in a lot of ways. And air travel post-COVID sucks, people.
Well, air travel post 9/11 sucks, people.
Yes, indeed. And by the way, the trick of raising your arm does not work at the Baltimore airport. Hey. Just giving everybody a heads up. Prepare all for right. The pat down.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. It works for me everywhere I've ever gone.
Yeah, well, there's a slight age difference between us.
Well, like a year, more or less, give or take.
Yeah, more or less, a couple decades, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, all now right. They're like, oh, so you're opting out? No, I just wonder. I mean, it's funny thing at IAH Houston, mm-hmm. flying out, no problem. Mm-hmm. Baltimore, problem. So mm-hmm. yeah, and so probably out. The most aggressive pat down I've received yet.
So like a thorough massage.
Oh yeah. Oh no.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. Learn something new. So you're back in Texas.
I'm back. Free. Yes, thank God. Tell you what, man. You know, I've been to DC a lot. I usually fly in and out of Reagan. Mm-hmm. But this time I was flying out of BWI because I was closer to Baltimore, and mm-hmm. that airport sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyone flying in and out of the DC metro area, Reagan. For the love of God, Reagan. Not Dulles, Reagan.
I always used to fly Reagan, but I had a friend that lives close to Dulles, so I ended up flying there for the last probably decade or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, DC is just a big traffic jam shit pile.
Well, depends on where you're going. If you're going to be actually in DC, then mm-hmm. Reagan's nice because you can just hop on the metro, go wherever you need to go.
Yeah, they actually do have a decent metro. That is one thing that DC has always had going for it. It's totally supported by government funding. It's not paid for by the ticket price, but it's pretty good metro.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, so I picked a hell of a week to be, you know, kind of off the grid. You saw the Peterson thing.
I did indeed.
Man, you saw his reaction too.
I posted his reaction. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good for him, man.
Got a little bit of the old angry Peterson in that one.
Yeah, absolutely. And you saw his deal with Daily Wire.
Yes. Daily Wire has just been killing it.
Well, they had 800. You know, they announced that they had 890,000 paying subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap. You look at that on their pricing plan, mm-hmm. the lowest one is like $9 a month.
Yep.
So you got to figure they've got some paying more than that. But at $9 a month, you know, mm-hmm. that's some substantial revenue.
That's more than people pay for, well, I guess not anymore. I was going to say more than Netflix, but Netflix has raised their prices.
Yeah, I mean, so at 890,000 subscribers at $9 a month, minimum pricing, you know, it's $8 million a month.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do say Jews run the world.
Yeah.
So the alt-media conservative network that's winning is, well, of course, run by Jews.
Well, you know, and here's the thing. People don't like to talk about it, but IQ research is a thing. And there is differences in the races on IQ. And Hasidic Jews are up at the top of the IQ range. Mm-hmm. So there's no conspiracy theory really needed. It's fairly natural that that's a thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that can be racist or whatever anyone wants to say, but empirical data is empirical data.
Yeah. Well, and I think Ben is, I don't think he solely owns it either, but.
No, he doesn't.
He's certainly the face of the thing.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, we're talking about Ben Shapiro.
Yeah. Ben Shapiro. Hi. I'm going to assume everybody that's listening to us knows who Ben Shapiro is.
Probably.
He was known for being the motor mouth yarmulke wearing guy going around colleges a decade ago and explaining why liberalism sucks.
I could not talk that fast. I just couldn't do it.
I still think the absolute best freedom tune is the one that Seamus did of the Shapiro Family Thanksgiving. Have you seen that one?
No, I have never watched any freedom tunes.
Really?
Nope.
Do you have a problem with Catholics?
Well, other than our current president, no.
Well, this is a very, very, like, outgoing Catholic, meaning he talks about it nonstop.
Yeah, I have seen him on Timcast.
On Timcast. Yeah.
Here's the thing. I'm a Christian. I don't push my religion on anyone. And primarily it comes down to the fact that I'm a libertarian. So, you know, whatever anyone wants to do, I don't see it necessarily affecting me unless you're causing harm to my life, my liberty, or my property. Mm-hmm. So I don't care.
Well, Seamus has got about 10 cartoons with Ben Shapiro in them, but I have to play a clip from the Thanksgiving one just because it's so awesome.
Oh, we're doing clips.
Freedom tune.
Yeah.
Do you talk fast always? Is
yes.
Like you're born this way?
Everyone in my family talks this
your
way.
Your family.
Happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving. Okay, folks, who made these cranberries? Honestly, these are the worst cranberries I've ever tasted. I made them, and it's actually extremely impolite for you to insult my cooking on Thanksgiving, okay, folks? Our taste buds don't care about your feelings, okay? Okay, gang, well, if you want to make your own cranberries, feel free, but you're not entitled to free food, and the idea that you would complain over quality of service when you're receiving it for free is just ridiculous, okay? Okay, could somebody please pass the mashed potatoes, folks? Actually, these are my mashed potatoes, okay? I made them myself, and they're therefore the product of my own labor. And the idea that you feel it's acceptable to put a gun to my head and force me not only to give you the mashed potatoes, but to actually have me pass them to you as well is absolutely asinine, okay? Okay, well, that would be a solid argument if not for the fact that you're eating asparagus, which I made, okay? Ben, how could you seriously not pass the mashed potatoes after taking her asparagus? Is it my fault she gave it away for free and lost all leverage? I'm trying to teach my child how to compete and succeed within the free market, okay, folks? Good guy, folks. I didn't realize I was surrounded by communists. I have the mashed potatoes and the asparagus because I make good decisions, okay, folks? Honestly, Ben, you're the last person to get smart with me considering you're the only one in the family to be born with an IQ lower than 300. Okay, well, you know what, Auntie? Believe it or not, some people consider an IQ of 215 to be relatively impressive, all right, folks? Sorry I'm late, folks. I had more important things to take care of. I'm actually a doctor. She's a doctor, folks.
His wife's a doctor,
she's
folks.
A doctor. My folks. Wife's a doctor. Did you bring the Cherokee?
Oh, well, socialism works.
So anyway, that's a little bit of the Thanksgiving at the Shapiro family.
Gotcha.
So
I'll have to add Freedom Tunes to the round table of podcasts.
They are pretty funny. I'd say 70% are funny enough to laugh out loud, and the other 30% go a little too far and try to make a point.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like Seamus. I think he's 70% funny and 30% over the top trying to make a point.
Yeah, the worst part of Timcast for me is Ian. I just,
every time
he opens his mouth, it's like, dude.
Ian is there to absolutely fuck with your hormones and trigger you. He is, I think, I swear to God, that's why Tim keeps Ian on that show, is Ian is the conservative trigger.
He makes everyone look smart. So
he does make everyone look smart, but he has this absolutely serious expression on his face all the time. And he'll say like three words that seem to be going somewhere and then throw in like three more
graphene
that are completely just out of left field. Like
graphene. Have you heard about graphene, Gene?
Yes, I've heard
graphene.
About graphene.
Graphene.
Mm-hmm. It's the future, man. It's the future. You know, graphene in batteries, actually, the experiment's being done on that. It looks like it's going to be a huge factor in improving battery life.
Yeah, what we actually need to do is actually move away from batteries and actually develop some supercapacitors.
Well, I've always preferred capacitors myself. You know, they're less communist, but they don't take a portion of the energy you put into them the way that batteries do.
Mm-hmm.
I think, isn't the issue with the capacitors just the inability to create as much surface?
Well, there are several issues. So electric cars could totally be feasible if we had actual supercapacitors.
Mm-hmm.
And I know after I made a math mistake last episode, but anyway.
Make a math mistake? Dude, let's remember. What kind of mistake did you make? Did I say
order
the right number?
Yeah. Order of magnitude. I'm a physics major. Leave me alone. Order of magnitude is
philosophy
acceptable.
Major here.
Everything can be summed up in a, you know, sphere. A horse can be estimated to be a sphere. We can work it with it. Anyway, now, so capacitors, surface area is a deal, but really it's about finding the right dielectrics and being able to successfully store enough energy at scale. Mm-hmm. You know, when we talk about grid stabilization devices and everything else, and we have these capacitor banks, so industrial size capacitor banks are very useful for voltage regulations and things like that. But they're a high wear item, believe it or not. And it's one of those things that's necessary for the modern grid. So we use them, but they're really an expensive resource because, you know, dielectrics, everything else ends up being a problem. Mm-hmm.
And where do we find these dielectric materials? In Afghanistan or in Ukraine, or where do they come from?
No, dielectric can be as simple as, you know, any insulating material between the two.
Right, but for the fancy ones, the ones that actually allow us to have the greatest storage, where do those materials come from?
Well, we don't use them. So most modern capacitors are pretty rudimentary, actually. We don't have any. All the supercapacitors, advanced capacitors are way mm-hmm. smaller scale. So the equivalent, just to not get too much into the weeds, because who the fuck cares about this? But the equivalent would be, lithium ion on your cell phone, everything else, mm-hmm. and industrial is lead acid would be the comparison. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Gotcha. Yeah, capacitors were fun. I remember back when I was a kid, in shop class, we made shockers. You know, like for doing pranks with other kids. And you get a 9-volt battery in there, and then you get a capacitor and you ramp up the voltage, and you have some contacts on the outside of the device. Go tell somebody to bring it over to you. And you laugh your ass off.
Yeah, so funny story.
I don't think they do that in schools these days.
So used to, if you remember in the early 2000s, we had this high-end usage. Before digital cameras, we had these disposable cameras. Mm-hmm. So instead of buying film and everything, you just buy this disposable camera. Well, you can make that into a pretty effective taser, actually, because mm-hmm. it's got a decent enough capacitor on it for the flash that, you can shock the hell out of someone with one of those.
Yeah, the idea of disposable cameras just seems like crazy at this point.
Oh, man, they still sell them. So my
paper ones?
Yeah, stepdaughter, she is all into, you know, lots of things, and she goes through and she uses disposable cameras with her friends. She's got a Polaroid, you know.
Oh my God.
It's a whole thing. It's like, this was technology when I was a kid. What the hell?
That was technology way before that, actually. Yeah. That is nuts.
Yep.
I can't imagine. Well, so somebody's got to be still making Polaroid film?
Yep. Polaroid.
That's nuts. Is it more expensive now than it used to be?
I don't know. I haven't tracked the.
I mean, it used to be like, I think, quarter per image, which was pretty expensive back in the old days.
It's more of a novelty thing for them, so I don't think anyone cares, you know?
Yeah, I guess just that Polaroid film effect is not enough on their cell phone.
Yeah. It's funny because when I was a kid, my mom had this 3D camera that she used. So take a picture and then had to go to some special processing, and it would produce this. It was a rough textured image. It wasn't, you know, flat, and it was a 3D effect on it. And it was different. It was weird. And I don't know why that technology never went anywhere.
Yeah, I think they used micro Fresnel lenses on that thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of. Or prisms. You basically are
separating the image to get depth. Yep.
So you're only seeing one with one eye and the other one with the other eye.
No. This was the printed image required no viewing device.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So it's a coating on top of the image that basically has.
Right, but you required a special camera that was able to take
special
in.
Special camera, but not a special viewing device.
Correct. And it was a Nikon technology. I just don't know why that never went anywhere. Who knows?
Well, printing was probably pretty pricey.
Yeah. Something to actually
dig
into.
I remember I had one of those cameras.
Yeah. So how have you been this week, Gene?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Just kind of, you know, leading up to the big weekend here in the U.S. for the 4th. A lot of people taking time off before and after. So that definitely means I was dealing with less people because a lot of them were off already. So I generally don't take time around Christmas or 4th of July off because it's usually the least stressful, least busy time.
Least amount of work you got to do.
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly.
So I've got a flight etiquette question.
Okay. Sure. I've flown.
If you're in economy, unfortunately, and you've
got... Okay, I got to stop you right there. I don't really know the answer to that one.
Fuck you. All right. So here's the thing. To me, everyone should shift towards the window. So if you've got the window seat, you shouldn't take an armrest. You should just take your armrest and the wall. If you're in the middle, you should take the armrest towards the window. Mm-hmm. And if you're in the aisle, you kind of get the middle armrest and you got the aisle armrest. But when an asshole in the middle takes the two armrests, what ends up happening is the poor bastard in the aisle ends up having to lean out to the aisle. So anytime anyone walks by, boom, boom, boom.
Yep.
Yeah.
That happens.
Anyway, and man, there was this one guy on the plane. He was right across the aisle from me. And he was one of those guys that, you know, believe me, I do not listen to instructions well. Okay. I'm not the kind of person that just complies with shit. But he had his laptop open and watching shit literally up until landing.
Yep.
And then we land, seatbelt sign comes off. I stand up immediately because that's what I do every time. And he did too. And now there's two of us cramped in the aisle. And it's like, no, dude, etiquette is whoever stands up first, that's who's up.
You know? You got to shift right to the middle of the aisle and not give them room to stand up. That's right there. Fuck.
Anyway, it was crazy. It was a crazy trip. We had the flight was scheduled for three hours.
Fly enough to get upgrades yet?
Not this year. Not since COVID. I'm still working on getting that status back up. And the other problem I've had is I've had to fly several airlines this year instead of just United. So
that's right. You don't like flying American.
No. Which actually, you know, in College Station, American would be advantageous to me because I could just fly out of here. But no, I don't like layovers, and the American leg that flies out of here just goes to DFW, which DFW is a shitty airport to have a layover in. So in my
mind. I totally disagree. The club there is really good.
I haven't ever been in the American club. I've got United passes and stuff like that. So I'll go to the United club and things like that. But yeah.
Got it. So you were off traveling out in the DC area. Any riots out there?
No, but I tell you what, it was very interesting to see a very diverse group of people, their masking protocols for some of them. And the funny thing is, in Slack, right afterwards, people were like, I just got home and I tested positive for COVID. And every single one of them that was like, oh, me too, and da-da-da, were the ones that were masked up and are the most vaccinated.
Well, wearing masks does contribute to lung...
Absolutely.
In general, yeah.
Anyway, but the neuroses of the people who were so, you know, wearing the N95 plus another mask over the top, yeah, literally double masking, and then they're the ones on Slack. This was a super spreader event. Oh my God, what did we do? You know, I just want to let everyone know I got home and I tested positive. Do you feel bad? Why the fuck are you testing?
Yeah.
Just insanity, man.
Well, I've gotten to the habit now when people are wearing a mask and they give me a dirty look because I never wear masks. I say, hey, I just wanted to thank you for wearing the mask since you're sick.
Mentally,
that's what it is.
But,
that's what it's always been in, like in Asian countries, is that if you get a cold, you wear a mask.
Yeah, no, I think it's a mental illness.
It is a mental illness, but that's what I'm saying.
Well, and the funny part
is, thank you for wearing a mask.
The people who were so pro masking, and some of the people who I work with that were involved in this, part of their job is risk analysis.
That's a scary thought, man.
Have no idea. It's like, you're really good at this part, but in daily life, you kind of suck. So
well, and right now, if you watch any of the Dark Horse podcasts, they like a recurring theme on there is more and more evidence coming out suggesting that getting vaccinated had actually increased your odds of having serious COVID.
Well, have you looked at Mercola and some of the others talking about the Russian roulette theory?
No.
So the Russian roulette theory around the vaccinations and what's happening with injury is less to do about the individual and more to do about what you actually received in the vaccine. So what they're saying is these mRNA vaccines, because they are so unstable and so on, and there's so many variables about, you know, you're having multiple draws from a single vial. So, you know, multiple shots are administered, things are getting into the vaccine, so on. Most people basically got a dud. So the vast majority of people who are getting vaccinated get a dud. There's basically little to no effect. But those who got an actual full-on hellacious dose are the ones that are seeing problems. And, you know, whether you think the VAERS data is nuts or whatever, when you look across Europe and everywhere else, it's pretty obvious that this vaccine should have been halted a long time ago.
Yeah. The percentage of heart attacks in people under 25 is directly correlated to the vaccines.
Fertility.
Yeah, fertility. But that one's been a long-running joke, but it's true.
Well, it's COVID as well. So here's the thing. I think COVID definitely has an effect on fertility, the spike protein, based off of the research that's coming out. Hell, Dave Rubin came out and was pretty...
Is he concerned about his virility?
Well, him and his husband are currently having two kids via surrogate. So they've got two surrogates pregnant right now. And
they have two of them. Wow.
Yeah. One from his...
Pick which one looks the best?
No. One's from his sperm, one's from his husband's sperm. Same egg donor, both ways. And anyway, he was talking about how they had surrogates have several miscarriages during COVID.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Like, and that, I mean, this is a hell of a thing. I mean, you're talking about someone
that's
you're vetting.
That's an expensive thing. That's like $60,000 per person.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. There's something's up. That's all I can say. Of course, well, according to Adam, we're the Twitter of podcasts, by the way. You heard that, right?
We're the Twitter of podcasts? Is that, yes. Did he say that? No, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, so he was talking about podcasts that don't play clips. Well, you played a clip, so I guess we're safe now. Oh. And just talking.
Oh, yes, I did. That's right. I did, yes. Yes, he didn't like podcasts that just give opinions and look at tweets. He liked podcasts that have clips. So there you go, Adam.
Yeah.
I think that was mostly a jab at Timcast.
I think so, a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, all they do is they bring up a tweet and then they talk about it for an hour.
Yeah.
Well, I've decided on the last episode of my other podcast, Darren Unrelenting, I realized that, you know, Darren, I think our podcast is literally Seinfeld. Like, it's a podcast about nothing. We have no topics. We have no prep. We have nothing that even from episode to episode carries on. It's just, it's a podcast about nothing.
He agreed. That's not a bad thing. I haven't finished it yet. I'm a little over halfway through. But in my defense, I was in the air for, you know, almost 6 hours when it was supposed to be a 3 hour flight.
Wait, how are you in the air for 6 hours on a 3 hour flight? This I got to hear.
Weather delays. Houston got slammed yesterday, so they taxied us out on the runway and no cell phone coverage out there. And so, you know, an hour on the tarmac there and then in the air, delays, reroutes, all that. It was a long flight, man.
Wow, that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate it when they do that. It's sort of like, has the weather changed so much in the time that it took you before boarding the flight? Come on.
Well, you know, we had thanks to the rain sticks, we had a tropical depression move in. And
I did see that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the wind was coming from the north, which is unusual.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a weird day for flying yesterday, that's for sure. Did you see that the DOD is going to ignore the Supreme Court ruling?
Yeah.
You know, everybody gives Tim a lot of shit for saying civil war, civil war, civil war. But, you know, when the government starts ignoring itself, you know, when the branches start fighting in the way that I think we're really about to see. And I know you don't think there's a red wave coming here in November, but I think there's actually a pretty good chance. And so we're about to see the Supreme Court is already squaring off against the executive branch. And we're about to see the legislature square off against the executive branch. It's going to be a very interesting 2 years.
I think it's simpler than that, though. I think this is actually very reminiscent of what was happening in Soviet Russia. in the USSR, where you did have all the same branches of government that we have in the US. They were dominated by a single party. And so what really mattered wasn't who was the president of the country or, you know, who was the head of various departments. What mattered was who was the head of the party, because the decisions about what the government does come from the party that controls it. Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing the exact same thing here, is that the head of the party, Barack Obama, does not like what is happening in the single branch of government not under the party's control. They have a very slim minority, barely a minority in the Supreme Court, and they don't like it because they would like to have the government be controlled by the party, much like it was in the grand old Soviet times. And I say grand old because this is what the U.S. is going towards. The U.S. is fast on its path to socialist organization, and I've been a number of times been saying it's quickly becoming the USSA.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, going back to my on-site this last week, it was scary to see the amount of Ukraine pins and flags. And yeah, it's, you know, working for a company that is as woke as this one is definitely interesting. But hey, that there's some freedom respect there. So it all works out. And also, one of the things I learned this last week is the number of people who think like me is actually a fairly high percentage in the company. So it's the vocal minority that's out there yelling and screaming.
I was going to tell you what you always say, which is when you think you need to bury your guns, maybe it's time to use them.
100%, man. You know, it. There was a poll that came out this week that a quarter of the country thinks that it's time to take up armed revolt against the United States government.
A quarter country. There's another poll I just saw that shows that 27% of the U.S. population, or of those polled anyway, think that Biden should run again.
That's a scary thought.
So that's a scary thought, because I think that number should be zero. But the inverse of that is also that you have, 73% of the people that see Biden as not somebody that would want to see in office again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a positive thing, but really it ought to be like 99% of the people should see that. Yeah. I'm trying to remember back, because I was around back then. I'm trying to remember what Carter's numbers were in the midterms. I don't recall off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think we're headed towards that sort of surge. The amount of revolt that's going against this woke wave that we're seeing. So Disney has gone off the rails, but the new Buzz Lightyear movie, total flop, should have been a summer blockbuster. But like, and my son loves the Toy Story movies. I like the Toy Story movies because it's not a prince and princess movie, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't give bullshit on love. It's just a hero story, right? It's nothing but a hero story of coming together and working together. The Toy Story movies are pretty damn good for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Buzz Lightyear movie, you know, has the lesbian kissing scene. And then
I did not know that. I was not aware of that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They've got a same-sex couple kissing in the new Buzz Lightyear movie.
Of course they do.
And then Big Hero 6, there's a new TV show that's a spinoff of that. And which I haven't seen the movie, but the protagonist is this android that's trying to help a little girl who's getting her first period. So he goes to the tampon aisle and asks, and there's a transgender male giving advice on what tampons and pads to use.
Yeah. And so
this does not belong in a kid's show.
While you were watching that, I watched the movie about what was it called? It's about the 40-year-old dude that goes to the spelling bees for kids.
I have no clue.
Oh, really? It has one of my favorite actors in it. I'll tell you what the movie is. It is called Bad Words. Okay. Jason Bateman's the guy who's in it. And it's a movie about an adult dude that, through a loophole in contest rules, ends up going and competing at, like, eighth grade spelling bees.
Well, does he win?
Yeah, he works as a proofreader.
Ah, there you go. See, I would fail. My spelling is not a good thing.
Same here. Interesting.
Yeah. I can do lots of things. Spelling and fuck homonyms, by the way.
I volunteered to fix the spellings of the English language when I was in school because they were clearly incorrect. I don't understand why words are not spelled phonetically. That never made any sense.
Yeah, I had a joke as a kid. Hooked on phonics didn't work for me.
Well,
when I was a kid, hooked on phonics was a big deal, and they had all the kids saying hooked on phonics worked for me, you know. So
yeah, definitely, I remember that. So got some numbers on Carter. It looks like during the midterms, the House lost 34 seats.
Yeah,
so that will be interesting. Carter's approval was at 22% at midterms.
Well, Biden's is below that.
No, Biden's right now is at 29%.
Based off of what?
The last Rasmussen.
What about real clear politics?
I don't know. I mean, that doesn't exist back in the Carter days. So that's comparing different polling organizations.
Well, but it's just different metrics. Yeah, it's just the average, though.
I know. But my point is that it's about as bad. It's in the same general vicinity with Biden right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, really what we need to look at is what gas prices are doing and inflation. That's what's going to tell the story when it comes to the midterms.
Mm-hmm.
If gas prices stay where they're at, he's done. I mean, the Democrats are going to lose tremendously.
Well, I'm really, really hoping that California governor runs.
Oh my God. If Newsom
I'm almost
runs.
Ready just to move to California and just to vote for him in the primaries because I really want him to run.
It will be
funny.
That
means literally any Republican wins.
Oh, yeah. Well,
really doesn't matter
who runs. He won't get the nomination.
I hope he does.
Yeah. He won't. He won't. Kamala Harris will get the nomination before.
No. I think people are tired of her. I don't think she will.
Okay. AOC could run and get the nomination.
I would vote for AOC.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need more hot chicks in office.
She's not that hot,
well,
dude.
She's reasonably
got
hot.
Her face. Yeah.
She's dorky hot.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
Name another person in Congress who's hotter.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. She's the queen of the ball there. No, I do. I think she has no business being in politics, obviously, but I do think that she has that sort of like dumb blonde, but she's not a blonde kind of thing going for her, where it's adorable that she makes simple mistakes. You know what I mean?
No, she makes some complex mistakes. So something that Tim brought up the other day was her comments about the Civil War in the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And it's just asinine. Which, by the way, people, you got to just either be honest about history or don't talk about it. Because one of the things that bugs the shit out of me that Tim does is he sits there and he waffles on history. And I think he's actually doing enough research on the Civil War to go, hey, you know what? This wasn't necessarily all about slavery. There was a lot of other things going on.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah. Well, not everybody, but anyway, he's finally coming to that realization, but he doesn't want to piss people off. So he still couches his language.
He does, yeah.
In such a way that it's just, come on, you're there. Let's move on. But whatever.
I agree with you on that. I think Tim gets a lot of undeserved ragging for like things like, oh, why is he wearing a hat all the time? But on that particular issue, I do agree with you.
I mean, what it comes down to is, you know, read, if anyone wants to know what the Civil War was about and why the South left, read South Carolina Expositions and Protests by then Vice President John C. Calhoun, and read the bills of secession that were passed by the state legislatures. You know, Tim keeps looping in Texas saying, well, they seceded because of geography. No, that's not why they seceded. Actually, there's a whole segment in the Texas Declaration of Secession bitching about, hey, we were a free and independent country. Mm-hmm. We didn't join to be overruled and abide by these abominable tariffs. Yeah. You can't do this to us. We're taking our ball and we're going home.
By the way, one of the biggest mistakes Texas made.
Oh, absolutely. Texas should have never joined the Union.
Nope. And they literally, from the first day of the independence of Texas, there was a movement to join the Union.
And that was problematic, yes. And that so Texas selling off a lot of the land that we sold off to enter the Union debt-free, I'm fine with doing that. Sell that land to the U.S., but stay Texas. The other thing is that, you know, had the Civil War been fought in the 1850s instead of the 1860s, the South would have absolutely won.
And was that a technological issue or what?
Well, it was a development issue. It was a financial issue. So cotton, you know, the famous declaration in the Senate is cotton is king. Yep. Well, in the 1850s, that was absolutely true, that the South was the undisputed economic powerhouse. A lot of people don't realize, but Mississippi going into the Civil War was one of the richest states in the Union. After Reconstruction is still to this day the poorest. But what's interesting was Great Britain had developed by the 1860s some cotton plantations in India and other countries and in Egypt. So before that, the South was the undisputed cotton producer. And economically, the world would have backed the Confederate States of America. Absolutely. They were on the fence. You know, Great Britain actually did have an embassy to the Confederate States of America. People don't know that, but they recognized the Confederate States of America as a separate country. Well, that's kind of a big deal. You know, if the world sees it as a civil war, which is coached in our history today, typically, you know, powers don't recognize factions like that.
Yeah, but I mean, faction recognition is always political. There are plenty of countries that don't recognize Taiwan as a separate country today.
And that's a problem.
Yeah. I, for one, don't recognize Northern Ireland as a separate country from Ireland. So there are lots of politically based decisions on who's recognizing what. A lot of countries right now don't recognize Crimea as being part of Russia. So recognition of territories has more to do with, if I do that, what do you give me, than anything else? Now, the reality of the situation is that when you can't argue it and you recognize it, then it's not motivated so much by political gains, but by just reality. And that's what happened when China took over the seat at the United Nations for Taiwan. Because obviously China, communist China, as much as we don't like communist China, was nonetheless the country that held that seat with a new government.
Yeah. And, you know, this is where it's going to be very interesting to see what happens over the next couple of decades. Because, you know, as the one country, two systems treaty with the UK fades out.
Yeah. Well, it's gone. There's nothing left of that.
Well, except there's time. So, you know, right now, I would say China is in violation of the treaty.
So what? It's irrelevant. I mean, a treaty that is unenforceable is an irrelevant treaty.
Well, you know, Great Britain could enforce it.
Nope.
Why not? Try it.
Because Great Britain is almost bankrupt right now.
Okay.
They can't afford the fuel for their fleets.
Yeah, well, you know, go get in the fight, declare Article whatever of NATO.
Can't do that.
Let's go.
Article 6, it can only be declared upon an attack on a country of NATO, not upon a NATO country attacking somebody else. In fact, there's a difference.
They don't have to attack. In fact, all they have to do is do a blockade between mainland China and Taiwan.
A blockade is considered by the entire world as a declaration of war.
Really?
You cannot blockade somebody.
Oh, so then when we talk about Fort Sumter, it wasn't the South that started the Civil War.
No one thinks the South started the Civil War. The North started the Civil War.
Thinks the South started the Civil War because they fired nobody the first
shots. Nobody I know thinks that.
So for those that don't know, Northern ships were trying to run a blockade. We're trying to get into Fort Sumter.
Which they erroneously claimed belonged to the North.
Yep.
Clearly not the case. So I looked this up while we were talking here. It looks like the inflation hit 14.8%. peak during Jimmy Carter's term.
Oh, we're going to blow past that.
We are currently past that.
You're looking at shadow stats?
Shadow stats using the same formula that was used in the 1970s.
Uh-huh.
We are over 20% right now.
Oh, I 100% believe that, man. Yeah. You know, traveling, looking at the cost of goods, different areas, different places.
Yeah.
It's insane right now.
You can't get a meal for under $10 anymore.
Oh, fuck that.
They just don't exist.
your average, my average lunch while traveling, and this is airports, this is things like that. So yes, it's up
shitty
there.
Cheap food.
Yeah. Well, but expensive.
Expensive, so, shitty cheap food.
You know, flying pre-COVID, I could do a lunch at an airport or something like that for 50 bucks, you know, 25, 50 bucks.
You could do a lot more than a lunch at an airport for 50. What are you kidding? How much are you drinking?
That's a whole nother topic. I was going to say,
typically lunch, if I wanted to pay for lunch, it was always under 20 bucks at an airport. I couldn't imagine more than 20 bucks at an airport.
Right. But now it's all in, it's 50, easy.
Yeah. I believe that.
That's my point. So, fuck, my breakfast flying out of IAH the other day, which was a crappy little breakfast burrito, was $15. Oh, shit. And that's that's just eggs. That's not bacon or anything else. That's just eggs, pico, and a tortilla.
Well, eggs is one of the biggest factors that went up. So, in the 80s, the price of eggs was 29 cents for a dozen.
Yeah.
Maybe you hit 39 if you went to a more fancy grocery store. Mm-hmm. But it was under 50 cents a dozen, and it was under a buck a dozen for decades. I mean, I think it probably went over a buck a dozen maybe 15 years ago, but now it's $5 a dozen for eggs.
Yeah.
And those things are pooped out once a day by a bird that basically you get for free.
Well, so different species, different races of chicken, different breeds of chicken produce different amounts of eggs. But yeah, generally once every 22, 23 hours and for the first couple of years, and then they get laid out pretty quick.
And then you get rid of them and you get new ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you have one rooster just to repopulate the ones you get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is not expensive or complicated farming here.
Well, and if you let them out in your yard, you'll have way fewer bugs and way better eggs.
Yeah, they love eating bugs. That's their main source of protein.
Lizards, man. Here's the thing. People think chickens are...
I don't condone the killing of lizards myself.
People think chickens are vegetarian.
They're definitely not vegetarian.
Fuck that.
No, hell no.
So when I had chickens, I used to throw them scraps, and like I would take meat scraps and stuff and put it in the scrap bucket for them and throw it out there. And they will fucking fight over some meat, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you want to get rid of a body? Confirm.
Or hogs or anything else, yeah.
Yeah, hogs will make it disappear real fast. But yeah, chickens are definitely omnivorous. And so are ducks. They're geese, vegetarian. You know that?
Yeah, depends, but yeah.
What do you mean depends?
I mean, geese will eat insects and stuff like that. They're insectivorous as well.
I don't think so. I think they're purely vegetarian.
Okay.
We can check. We can Wikipedia it. But
consult the book of knowledge.
I honestly thought all birds were omnivorous. I didn't think there was vegetarian birds. And then I read up on geese and I was like, oh, I guess geese are.
You know, some of the best duck is, fish eaters, pescatarians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Largely.
I'm not a big fan of duck. I don't know. I used to like duck l'orange. But
we gotta get you some duck and sausage gumbo going.
Lean meat. This is why I love buffalo. It's my favorite meat these days. I probably eat it at least twice a week.
Yeah, I need to make you some duck and sausage gumbo. I'll change your mind on duck.
You know, I love gumbo. It's one of my favorite meals.
Me too. I grew up making it, and I like to cook, and I love Cajun food. I've got a redfish couvillon recipe. I'll give you at some point, and. I always put a redneck spin on everything. So like when I do my puttanesca, you know, it's usually catfish puttanesca. Okay. And when I do a ceviche, I'll do catfish and shrimp. And
really? I would think catfish ceviche would be very strong taste to it.
Catfish is perfect for ceviche because it firms up so well under the acid. Does really well, actually.
Right. Yeah, because I do like catfish. Like, I grew up eating catfish, but they were basically junk fish, so you could catch them anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people don't like the taste of catfish.
Really? See, I don't
like the bottom dweller. It's digging through the muck.
Yeah, so I don't like salmon. I can't stand salmon. Oh, so salmon to me is a trash fish. It's too fishy.
No. Oh, I disagree. I think salmon has a... Okay, I know exactly what you're saying, because compared to tuna, raw salmon versus raw tuna, salmon is very fishy. But I also love, I guess I don't mind the fishy taste from the ocean fish, because I also love sardines.
A lot of people like, don't sardines. Like sardines. I love
you
sardines.
You do like sardines.
Yeah.
Okay.
But something about salmon, I just don't like. So,
really?
Like, I grew up eating redfish, which is a mm-hmm. drum. And, yep. You know, I grew up eating flounder and, you know, lots of...
Not a fan of flounder.
What the hell is wrong with you?
No, nope, not a fan of flounder.
No, you take...
I like cod. You like cod?
I mean, it's just blah. It's bland. It's about like tilapia.
No, it's not like tilapia. It's a completely different flavor. Might as well be.
It's saltwater tilapia, but okay.
Cod, I think, is closer to like... non-fatty tuna.
And anyway, you know, I grew up on the back deck of a shrimp boat for the first mm-hmm. 10 years of my life, and I got to eat some really good seafood all the time. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, different world. And you know, up in Baltimore, I had some oysters this week, and there were some good oysters and everything else, but
don't eat, you know, that.
You don't eat oysters?
I don't eat oysters. Nope.
Why?
Don't like them.
Okay. Well,
don't like the texture.
So, well, I mean, different textures depending on preparation, but yeah.
And slimy things.
Okay, okay. Well, for those who don't know, Gulf oysters are actually fantastic. People talk about, you know, Chesapeake Bay and all this, that, and the other. There's some big, pretty oysters up there, but flavor-wise, Gulf oysters are fantastic. So.
Yeah, I've just... The only mollusks that I... will eat our escargot because they're cooked in hot oil and they're not slimy at all. They're very firm.
Well, I had some oysters this week that you'd like then because it was grilled oysters on the half shell and they were in that garlic butter, same sort of thing as escargot, and they were grilled and they were just absolutely phenomenal.
Okay, you know what? I've never tried that. I would be willing to try it, but the oysters that I've tried, and I've had plenty of friends like, oh, you got to try these. These are awesome. I never liked them. So
my favorite,
but I'd be willing to try them in garlic butter.
My favorite oysters are the ones my dad and I used to do when I was growing up. We'd go out and we'd dredge oysters, East Galveston Bay, come back, shuck them. You know, I'd eat them raw while we were shucking them too, but mm-hmm. we'd have big parties. We had October parties down on the beach all the time because October down in Galveston area is fantastic. Tourists are gone. It's fucking great weather. It's just perfect for an outdoor barbecue weather, typically. Anyway, what we would do is we'd take these oysters and we'd wrap them in bacon, one toothpick, and you throw them on the grill, real hot grill, just enough to cook the bacon, take them off, and you're done. And oh my God.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd certainly be willing to try stuff like that, but I don't like the typical sort of oysters with just some lemon sprinkled on top.
Well, I mean, raw oysters aren't for everybody.
No.
You know, some people have I'm swallowing a loogie sort of thing. You know, I get that. I get that.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not a fan. Well, eat most other foods. I'm not particularly picky in a lot of foods. I'm not a fan of certain Chinese foods. Like I don't particularly like tripe or other gastrointestinal organs.
So no menudo for you.
No, but I do like liver. I have liver in the fridge right now.
Liver can be good. Liver can be real good. Yeah. I'm not a big organ eater at all. You know, a bowl of menudo, depending on the day and the hangover, you know, that can I can see that. But, you know, I prefer pozole over menudo. So,
well, I would prefer filet mignon.
Who wouldn't?
Well, apparently you, because you would actually prefer ribeye.
Well, I prefer a ribeye, but yeah.
Yeah.
But if you're giving me the choice between, you know, stomach and filet mignon, I'm going to take the filet mignon. Come on.
Sure. Yeah, and I've had some of these organ meats in Hong Kong years ago and at a restaurant that doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately. Hong Kong's really changed, you know?
Never been.
You missed it. Right now, post-full Chinese sort of, I don't want to call it occupation because it is part of China, but it full Chinese control. The tourism and the sort of high-end lifestyle is fast disappearing. A lot of it's already gone. And so Hong Kong is no longer the gateway to Asia that it once was. I think Singapore probably is these days.
Well, you know, the Chinese economy is really going to be hurting here pretty quick, I think.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay, why?
Why would it be? I mean, I think China right now
the
is
Chinese
the
real
prime
estate market
position.
Is about to fucking collapse. And that is the store of wealth for most Chinese. They don't have 401ks. They don't have investments in foreign stocks for the average
sure.
Chinese. It's property in China. They have all these ghost cities that they've built where they have these buildings and people own X number of apartments and there's no stairs, no elevators, no nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's such an artificial construct. And with the global economy about to fucking tank with the U.S., man, I don't know. I am happy to be in the U.S. because I think we'll survive it better than the rest of the world for the most part. I think
our
Europe will be okay.
Is way better than the European parachute, that's for sure.
Oh, shit. Europe's going to be screwed. I think China's going to be screwed. I think Russia's actually going to be okay because of the moves that they made during this entire conflict. Yep. To back their currency, at least mm-hmm. partially by gold, is huge.
So China just ordered 300 new airplanes from Airbus and canceled their orders with, which is what some people, I don't know if I fall into this camp or not, but where some people are calling the beginning of the anti-US sanctions.
I can see it.
And you don't have to declare formal sanctions the way the U.S. likes to make a media show about it. You just basically prevent anybody in your country from doing business.
Yeah.
And this is a huge order. This is, I can't remember how many billions. It's like $200 billion or something worth of airplanes. Now, I don't know if Airbus is going to be able to deliver this because Europe is going to not have any electricity. So it's going to be pretty hard to run a factory without power. But the idea that these orders, which were projected to be split between Airbus and Boeing, have now all gone to Airbus, is definitely going to affect Boeing's price, and probably there'll be some layoffs.
So one thing I'll say for you, well, A, yes, Boeing is about to be screwed, but B, China may survive. You know why?
Why?
Because Uganda just found $12 trillion worth of gold.
Oh, Chinese gold. That's pretty cool.
Well, in Uganda, but they're owned by Belt and Road Initiative, man.
Mm-hmm.
Uganda has leveraged so much through China.
Yeah, you know. China owns a lot of the African countries at this point.
Yeah, but when you think about the infrastructure and everything that's gone into Uganda mm-hmm. through the Belt and Road Initiative, yep. and now you've got this resource that should be great for your country, but then there's that.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. $12 trillion worth of gold, apparently.
Yes.
Which is a good chunk that the Chinese are going to be able to dig out of there.
Well, I would bet money that when they go to start mining that, it will be Chinese companies doing the mining.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, they'll get, what will happen is Uganda will get a royalty fee. But China's going to get the gold. So it's good for the country because they did nothing to deserve this. This just happens. But and they will get a reward for it. But it's vastly different than a civilized country discovering $12 trillion worth of gold somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's different. I mean, natural resources are natural resources, but, you know, and that they're not spread out evenly across the globe.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that was one of, you know, Payne's arguments in Common Sense was, you know, that the U.S. had these natural resources and why, if not now, when?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
That's true. Let's see what else going on. The other bit of news is it looks like the blame game between Europe and Lithuania has come to an end.
I don't know the story.
Well, the story is that you, I'm sure, are aware that there's a small slice of Russia
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm,
is disconnected. Mm-hmm, it's an yes. exclave.
Yep.
Called Kaliningrad.
Yes.
And which was part of reparations from Germany, basically, for World War II. And so instead of that becoming part of Poland after World War II, it became part of Russia. And it stayed that way. No one was really all that concerned because they were all part of the Soviet Union anyway. But Lithuania had decided that they're going to do a strict interpretation of the EU sanctions on Russia, which forbid the transport of Russian products in a whole bunch of different categories, right?
Yeah.
And Russia was, you know, sending goods back and forth, but primarily, I would imagine, to Kaliningrad.
Through, for export, yeah.
Yeah, through Lithuania. Well, not for export. I mean, it's Russia sending to Russia, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just shipments back and forth between a disjointed part of Russia and mainland Russia. And so Lithuania said, well, we're forbidding the transport of all these Russian goods on their railroads, because they've had, that's how most of those goods were conveyed. And the Russia said, okay, so you're blocking transport of goods from Russia to Russia. That's a blockade. And as defined by international law, that is a declaration of war. So we're going to give you a week and make sure that you understand that you just declared war on Russia. And by declaring war, it means that all the NATO treaties don't apply, because you're not allowed to declare war on somebody in right. NATO. You're only supposed to respond to
right.
a declaration of war on you. And Lithuania said, look, we're just doing what EU told us to do because we're part of the EU. So blame them. It's the EU declaring war on you, not little old Lithuania. EU, meaning Germany, which is mostly who runs the EU.
Yeah, the third.
Said, whoa. This is bullshit. We never told them to do this. We never said block goods from transit between a country and itself. That is a blockade. We're only saying blocking the transport of goods from Russia to your country or a third party country, not Russia to Russia. So no, that's all Lithuania. That's not the EU. So if they do this, it's on them. It's not on us. And so now, depending on what you read as the source, like if you read the German papers, they're saying that Lithuania will surrender to Russia, literally using those terms, for its illegal halting of transport. If you read Polish newspapers, it'll say Germany siding with Russia in and against Europe. You know, it's like there's a lot of infighting that's starting to happen in Europe right now.
Yeah,
because they can't agree with each other.
So it's interesting. I work with a guy who's, I'll just say it, he's fucking brilliant. He is one of the smartest guys I know. Probably one of the best people at regular expressions I've ever seen. Very, very intelligent.
That's a whole language in and of itself.
Exactly. He's Russian. And at this on-site and everything, he was not drinking. And I asked him why. And he said, well, I've given up drinking until Putin's dead. Okay, well, the might be a while. All right, cool.
Might be, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a visceral reaction in a lot of people.
Yeah, there's a certain old Russian ethnic profile who can't differentiate between Russia and the USSR.
Yeah, and it's not just Russians. It's a lot of various people. I mean, you know, CSB, God bless him. You know,
they're racist. He's one of those. I mean, CSB is a total racist. That's what it comes down to.
I won't go that far.
Well, I'm definitely going that far. And by the way, I think CSB and I agree on most issues.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the interpretation of this military action that's happening in Ukraine, this denazification, he is completely oblivious to it. Well, he doesn't understand it.
So for me, I don't have a dog in this hunt, right? Yeah. I don't give a shit.
Right.
I don't care what happens to Ukraine. I just don't. I can see multiple sides of the issue. I don't think Russia is inherently evil. I don't think the U.S. is inherently good. I just have a different take on the world. So when I see actions happening in Ukraine, I see what was happening in Donbass as being, quite frankly, ethnic cleansing of a sort. So I can see a response to that. I don't think Russia has tried to just bowl over Ukraine and take over the entire country. I don't think that.
At this point.
I'm sorry?
I think they should at this point.
No, I don't. And I think that would validate too many wrong opinions.
Yeah, but I think the problem with Ukraine at this point is that it's going to become the Afghanistan of the 1970s for Russia if they don't.
Well, I think if they stop at the Donbass and just hold what they've got, I think they'll be fine. I think Ukraine, especially with the money that's been dropped in there, the arms that have been dropped in there.
It's all gone.
It's going to become the Mexico of Europe. It's going to be a failed narco state very quickly.
Yeah, but like any money that comes in is gone instantly. That is not hanging around there.
Well, it's going to the politicians.
Well, it's going to the politicians through the mob. It's basically funding their retirement accounts by stealing taxes from their population, using the cause of anti-Russia to basically fund their offshore accounts. So we send $100 billion to Ukraine, And probably the politicians get $20 billion of that back into their own private reserves. $80 billion goes to various actors around.
First, it's got to go through our defense contractors first. All this aid is nothing but a bailout to, you know.
Well, that's a good point. So let's say that we call it $100 million, which is the retail price. So the wholesale cost of all these military products are probably a third of that.
Yeah. This is a bailout to Boeing. This is a bailout to Lockheed. This is a bailout to General Dynamics, et cetera.
Yeah. But I'm literally right now seeing U.S. manufactured products for sale from Ukraine on Russian language, you know, eBay type sites.
Well, ammo. So we put sanctions. Everybody thought ammo, you know, ammo prices were going to go through the roof based off of these sanctions because Russian ammo wouldn't be available. Dude, it's getting shipped to Bulgaria and other places, restamped and shipped out. Yes, there is a surcharge, but, you know, to say that you right now you can get what is Russian manufactured ammo with a different stamp on it.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's absolutely the case. So there's a lot of that's the thing is I wish somebody in the West had enough of a brain to calculate the full equation of sanctions. And I don't think anyone has had enough of a brain to do that because they assume that sanctions will punish Russia with zero cost to the U.S. or Europe. And the reality has been that for each sanction down the list is they maybe affect Russia by 20% and they affect Europe by 80%.
Well, here's the problem with sanctions. I'm fine with tariffs, but saying I can't do business with someone is a problem. Show me where in the Constitution that the government has that power. They have the power to tariff. I'm good with that. But to make it illegal for companies to do business with each other across borders is inherently immoral. And just, you know, if you're a free market capitalist at all, just totally anathema. You can argue about tariffs and protectionism and all those sorts of things. That's an entirely different conversation. But the question is, if I am a free person, why can I not do business with someone else? What is it? What right does the government have to tell me I cannot buy something from someone in Russia?
Yeah. What right does the government have to steal $300 billion?
Well, I mean,
by telling banks not to do business with the other country.
Well, the due process is gone. And to take it back to the earlier portion of the podcast, since I was in Maryland this week, you know, this all started with Lincoln and his executive order to suspend habeas corpus. And the reason why he did that, by the way, if you don't know, Maryland was going to secede, and Lincoln suspended habeas corpus so the military could arrest the state legislature and prevent them from doing so. This is really where the inflection thing started because, you know, yeah, you had the Sedition Act and you had lots of things, but to actually just arrest people without any, you know, deprive people of any due process started there. Fast forward to today, you've got the red flag laws, you've got these sanctions, you've got everything in place. And the government really is just saying, you know what, we're going to do to you whatever the hell we want to.
Yeah. Yeah. For the good of the country, we're going to become dictators.
Yes. Trust us. It's in your best interest.
Yep.
And the fact of the matter is the average person doesn't want to be free. They want to be taken care of. So it jives. Yeah. And that's the fucking problem is people don't want to be free.
No, I think people, especially in the West, especially in the US lately, but in Europe as well, certainly, they have what I would describe as a more traditionalist view of the government, which is the government is the monarchy. They're here as our parents, in effect, to make decisions that are for our good. They see the government as their betters, not as their employees. And this was a distinction that was made during the U.S. Declaration of Independence, in that the government was something that was, you know, it controlled by the people to ensure certain fairnesses.
Well, existed. I mean, let's be honest, Europe is barely out of serfdom.
It is, right? Yeah.
I mean, they are just right out of serfdom. Yep. And they still have that mentality. the U.S. You know, have you ever heard of the colony theory of?
I'm not sure if I have.
So the most independent, the highest intelligence people are the ones that are going to go to a colony, at Australia being not a good example because of its colonization history.
It's a prison colony.
Right.
It's a camp.
But beyond that, so the U.S., you know, the people who were industrious enough to make it over and to build a life,
yeah,
you know, had a certain quality that, you know, I think we're going to have to colonize Mars or something to get that back.
Oh, but, totally. You know. Yeah. Musk is right onto that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever read The Expanse series?
I have. I thought we even talked about it. I got to the third book. I haven't read anything beyond that yet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for those who don't know, in The Expanse, Mars is colonized by Texans and Indians. So you've got
India.
Yeah, yeah. From Alex, one of the main characters, is a Indian guy, but he speaks with a Texas accent, so it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always really, that was my favorite character, honestly, in The Expanse.
Really?
And yeah, absolutely. And when they fired him, I did a whole mail writing campaign because that was such bullshit.
What do you mean when they fired him?
When they fired Alex.
And they got off the TV show?
Yeah, off the TV show.
I haven't watched the show. So
you got to be kidding. You haven't seen the show?
Parts of it.
Totally see the show. First of all, it is very close to the books. But I think up until, you should watch the first three seasons. Okay. After that, it kind of goes into its own little place. Like, no TV show that starts well ever ends well. I don't know why, but that seems to be almost universal. But the first three seasons of Expanse, very close to the books, and I thought the acting was outstanding. And the thing about that show, for a lot of like space video game nerds like me, is universally accepted as the most realistic TV show in science fiction ever.
Well,
made.
The books are all the physics of accelerating, decelerating, all that is very realistic. Now, for instance, Man in the High Castle, love the book, mm-hmm. read the book,
mm-hmm.
reread the book several times, couldn't get past the first season of the show.
I think the first two seasons were good. After that, it went downhill.
Yeah.
I actually kind of like the actress she's not like beautiful or anything, but she has a certain something about her in the TV show, A Man in the High Castle. Mm-hmm. And I also thought that the portrayal of Nazi Americans was very well done.
Yeah.
Like the integration of America apple pie with sort of Nazi aesthetic was just right on the money.
What do you think of the, so one thing that I got out of watching the first season was, mm-hmm. you know, that the Nazis continued to advance in technology and Japan did not.
Yeah.
That was an interesting take because that's not out of the book.
I think that's a pretty good take though, because I think historically it's probably closer to reality because Japan only got to the point of technological advances through the 1980s and 90s that dominated technology in the U.S. because of American occupation after the 1940s.
Interesting. Because, you know, Japanese engineering, Toyota, everything else.
All of it is based on American mentalities. It's the, what's the guy's name? I'm blanking out on him. But I actually...
MacArthur?
Not MacArthur. No, MacArthur, yeah, he ran the occupation. But no, I'm thinking of Deming.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Deming, mm-hmm. who brought Lean and is acknowledged by Japan, brought the concept of continuous improvement.
Yeah, Lean Six Sigma, the Toyota way. Yeah.
It all came out of Deming. And I actually did some work for the Deming Institute here in the U.S. And it was a fascinating to learn about the history and the lack of acceptance of Deming's approach in the U.S.
I disagree. Lean Six Sigma is huge in manufacturing.
In the 1950s.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
Today, it is huge.
It didn't get accepted in the U.S. until after,
after
they
Toyota's
saw the
success
of Deming's approach in Japan. And he was greatly respected and basically spent the rest of his life, you know, working with Japanese companies that enabled them to get to where they were. So I think traditionalism in Japan was probably the most likely condition after a success by Japan against the U.S.
So that's very interesting because from my perspective, being in manufacturing today for the last, you know, well over a decade now. Mm-hmm. You know, Lean Six Sigma, the Toyota Way, HPI, Human Performance Index, those sorts of things are pushed constantly.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that is absolutely true, but all of that wasn't originated in Japan.
Okay. I guess I gave Toyota and the Japanese more credit for that origination than I
You should maybe give them should've. Credit for seeing the benefits of that, but not for coming up with the processes. So Deming was born in 1900. He developed a lot of this plan, do, study, act processes in the late 20s, early 30s.
Uh-huh.
And it just did not catch on in the U.S.
Huh.
Total quality management was not a thing here until after it was part of the rebuilding of Japan.
Yeah, interesting. So, funny story from this week. I hit some people in the mouth this week. We were talking about lots of things, and 9/11 inevitably came up, and I started talking to people about Building 7, and they had no fucking clue.
Really?
Oh, it was funny to see the shocked eyes and quick Googling and huh.
Did they watch the video? Did you play the video of the building just spontaneously falling down?
I did. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. It was hilarity ensued. Hilarity definitely ensued. Oh, man. And fun story. So one of the guys I worked for at this company, I'm on my third boss at this company because we're growing so fast and moving stuff around. And he was giving me shit because I was wearing my backpack everywhere. I was keeping my laptop with me. He's like, dude, just leave your laptop in your hotel room, whatever, you know, come
on. Fuck that.
Yeah, hold on. The very next day, laptop stolen out of his hotel room. I walk up to him and I'm like, you know what you call that? What? Karma? Bitch.
Exactly. Yeah, old bitch karma. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. It'd be just hilarious. You know, he's giving me crap because I'm walking around. I've got my bag with me and all that. And he's just, you know, Ben, come on. You know, friendly circumstances. I'm like, have you seen the card readers on the hotel? Not great. You know, no. And And anyway, it was just hilarious. So I had to share that because it was funny.
No, that is total karma kicking in. I'm not a fan of adults wearing backpacks. To me, it always looks cheesy unless you're mountain hiking and you have a legitimate reason for it. But when you got, like, you know, dudes in basically business clothes or khakis and polos wearing backpacks, it just looks cheesy. Of leaving your laptop in a hotel room is also bullshit.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to defend my backpack. I carry a lot of shit around. My bag is the backpack that gets searched every effing time I go through security because I've got hard drives, I've got cables, I've got multiple laptops, I've got a Roku in there, I've got lots of stuff. So smaller bags just don't work for me. And when you're carrying as much weight as ends up in that bag, a backpack is the way to go.
I think a roller bag is better.
I do a roller bag for my suitcase and that's it. But anyway, regardless,
but it is, I mean, that is always fun to hear of karma.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was just poetic justice. It was poetic justice. Give me crap, you know, making fun of me a little bit. All right. Boom.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, if you really wanted to kind of split that, what you want to do is bring your backpack to the front desk and have them hold it for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you pick it up when you get back and then it's not in your room and susceptible to theft. Usually most hotels have an area that people can leave luggage that is supervised after they're leaving their rooms, but before they leave for their flights. Yeah. So there is a place.
A way to check your luggage, yeah.
Yeah, you can kind of, and you know, you can't go back there yourself. Like, they'll get it for you.
Right. And I do that sometimes, but it's not practical when you're in a business meeting and then you're going to, you know, a happy hour or dinner or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to run back and forth. And anyway, it was just funny because it wasn't him. It was an inside job. So this was where we had our on-site was at a casino. And no shit. And
hilarious.
Someone got a master key and went through that floor and they ended up catching him. But
Oh, they did catch him. So he got his laptop back.
He did.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So it wasn't.
Wow, that's a close call.
A very, very close call.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is yet another argument for not actually keeping anything on your laptop and doing everything in the cloud and just using your desktop or your laptop display for a VNC that's running somewhere else.
Yeah, VDI is a thing. But one of the things I'll say, though, is it's a good argument for having a hardware token required to access your laptop, good encryption, and, you know, anything important being in a TrueCrypt volume or something like that.
For sure.
At the very least.
And I haven't used TrueCrypt in ages, but I remember I always used to use TrueCrypt. In fact, I remember my IT guys at work were bitching about the fact that I always used TrueCrypt.
Well,
that's because I want to use something where the keys are not available.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things I would say is, there's a convenience trade-off, and it depends on the level of information you're dealing with. You know, do you trust the administrators? There's lots of things there. You know, if I can control physical access to the device, I can control physical access to the token that I'm using in Cordlet. You know, it depends. Are you going to be responsible? And are you one of those people who has to reset a password? Well, if you're that person that has to reset a password, you have no business keeping encrypted data on your laptop.
Yep.
Because you're going to lose it. But if you're like me and you're retentive and want to keep everything as secure as possible, then there you go. And, you know, one of the guys was like, well, dude, what's your threat model? Why do you think this is a thing? Well, I have access to a lot of utilities. I have a lot of access to customer data. I have access to environments. Access to my laptop from a threat model would be a bad day for our customers. Mm-hmm. So let's not go that route, you know?
Absolutely. No, now one thing I've started doing more of too is putting expiration dates on various things.
Mm-hmm.
Like when there seem to be more tools available that allow you to do that. So like one of the things, you and I communicate through Signal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I have a 40-day expiration on all our Signal communication.
Yeah, I mean, for instance, it depends on the person.
It's 1 day.
No. Actually, for some people, it's unlimited just because I want that historical record. And, I don't know. The expiring communication thing to me. So you can set that. But if I decide to take a screenshot of our communications, I've got that. So
and I have no problem with screenshots. What I have a problem with is somebody getting a hold of your device and then the entire string of communication being available on it.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know. And if the encryption of Signal is ever broken, you know, being able to rip that out, and I got you. But you know,
another issue is there's nothing that we talk about that will need to be referenced 2 months later.
Yeah,
literally nothing.
Completely agree with that there are other people that I want that reference.
Yeah, you know, and if you have a legitimate use for it. Like when I was doing security work back at Target Corp, one of the things that surprised me, and this is back would have been around 2006, maybe. One of the things that surprised me was their email retention policy.
Companies go one of two ways on this. Yep. Go ahead.
So their email retention policy was 2 weeks.
Wow.
So your email was in your inbox for 2 weeks, and then it was automatically deleted. And that was company-wide. And if you needed to have longer term retention of email for some particular purpose, everybody had like a separate folder you could move things to selectively for longer rotation. And that one was held, I believe, for 6 months and then that'll delete it after that.
So my last company, our retention policy was 90 days and could not archive out, no exceptions, so on. But you could print emails. So I wrote a VB script to go through and print emails to a folder. And
of course you did.
Yeah. Anyway, so I had retention beyond. And then later on, a few years after I got hired on, I ended up on legal hold because of my position and everything else. So I could always go to legal hold and be like, I need that email now. that's one way around it.
There's certainly plenty of times when I look things up, but I have to say, I kind of like the 2 week email out of delete thing, because if you don't get to something in 2 weeks, it probably is low enough priority that you don't really need to do it unless you have somebody following up with you.
I'm a bigger fan of marking. So people who strive for inbox zero, for example.
I'm not one of those, but I do appreciate it.
Well, kind of what I do is a auto mark red after X period of time, again, through VB. But which VB is not the running VB scripts.
I was going to say, boy, you sure trust VB well, don't you?
Yeah, no. Well, for my work stuff, that's a whole different thing. I would versus private and so on. It's just easy, man. you know, I'm not going to write it in Rust to go do this, you know, just not. But regardless, organizing your email, you know, I've got rules that dump different, you know, every emails from customers go to separate folders, things like that. Yeah. And, you know, internal email, if I miss something and you don't call me or message me directly, well, you know, screw you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a good way to go. If you want longer term things, there are other software tools besides email to track things, like project management software.
Well, and yeah, absolutely, you know, and Jesus Christ, what is with companies and Jira?
Yeah, we're just getting rid of our Jira right now, in fact.
Oh my God, I can't stand Jira. Yeah, mm-hmm. Atlassian is not a good project management solution. It's just not. Mm-hmm. I guess it works for developers, but if you're doing an actual waterfall project where, you know, timelines have to hit and things like that,
I think you're showing your age here, because I've interviewed project managers for a good 3 months.
Oh, agile.
Yeah,
agile.
Exactly. Until agile. Recently I hired one a couple of months ago, but it took 3 months to find one.
Yeah.
And one of my standard questions during the interview is, can you go through and name 6 different styles of project management for me? And like half the people that call themselves project managers can't do that. But, you know, once they do that, assuming they didn't, and they would say, well, can you give me an example of why you would use waterfall over agile or something else? Nobody uses waterfall anymore for anything. It's really fallen out of fashion. And I don't understand. Maybe companies just don't care and they're flexible enough to have shifting dates for everything.
Yeah. Well, what I would say is it depends on, and I think you're hitting on it directly, is there are different use cases for different types of project management.
Right.
Exactly. Software development, agile works fine for lots of things when you can fail. So in my world.
Yeah, exactly. When you can fail.
When you can fail. In my world, in critical infrastructure, when failure really isn't an option and millions and millions of dollars are on the line, and if you become the critical path project, you're fucked because everyone's looking at you going, hey, dude, you're the one costing us millions and millions of dollars every day that we're not back up and running. And when you have dependencies along the way that I have to get step A done before I can get step B done and so on, waterfall is absolutely the way to go.
That's certainly my take on it as well. But I think that this is kind of a minority position at this point, because more and more projects seem to be.
Yeah, again, I think it depends on your world, right?
Yeah, that could be. But just from interviewing people, that's of the people applying for a project manager position.
Oh, well,
that's the impression I got.
And the agile bigots, that I'll call them, think that, oh, everything can be done through Agile. Agile is, you know, everything can be done. Fuck you. I'm tired of scrums. I'm tired of doing this, that, and the other. No. And you can beat it to fit, I guess, but why? When I can open up, you know, Microsoft Project and put a timeline, a Gantt chart together and be good, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, there are uses for...
You know what's hilarious?
For each methodology.
Have you looked at the structured add-on for Atlassian?
No.
So it basically takes Jira and makes it into a waterfall project management tool, which is hilarious. So everyone wants to talk Jira. Everyone wants to talk water, you know, Agile and everything else. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then why does the add-on exist to basically make it a waterfall tool?
Yeah, it's
and also Jira is not a fucking ticketing system, for the love of God.
Have you been in situations where people were using it for that?
Yes.
Mm.
And it sucks. My last gig, we were forced to use Jira as our method of record. And, you know, why can't we use a CMDB or an actual ticketing system? Oh, no. We got to use this. We got to beat it to fit. And it just, it's painful.
Yeah. Sounds like you got some Jira issues to work out there, buddy.
Oh, it has been the bane of my existence for many years now.
So let me ask you a question. Now, you used to play video games in the past.
Yes, in the past.
Yeah.
And was a PC gamer for a very long time.
Yeah, PC gamer.
And then so, a little bit on console.
Right. And that's fairly similar to my background with gaming as well, because I played PC games for quite a while, and then I kind of stopped playing all games, and then I kind of felt like maybe I'm missing something, so I got a console. I got a, this was during the Xbox One era.
I had an Xbox One in college and immediately hacked it after that came out and used it for lots of things for a long time.
There you go. I just played video games on mine. But eventually, it just, I started getting jealous of the videos I was seeing of people playing on the PC doing shit I couldn't do on the console, and I gave in. And I took the intermediate step of buying a gaming laptop, thinking, well, it's not a full-blown PC because it is an all-in-one thing. I'm not tempted to do what I used to do, like back in the early 2000s, where I had a $7,000 Sub-Zero cooled PC that was purpose-built for gaming. I didn't want to go back to that because that seemed like a big waste of money.
It was.
And the gaming laptop lasted about a year, and then I said, well, this thing is not doing what I needed to do, so I need to actually buy a real gaming PC.
Well, the problem with the laptop is you can't really upgrade, right? You can't go next graphics card.
But that was literally one of my benefits, is that I wouldn't be tempted to spend money. But as it turned out, I was tempted to buy a whole new computer.
And we can agree that a keyboard and mouse is far superior to any controller ever made, right?
Well, it depends on for what. Because certainly for flying airplanes or spaceships, dual sticks is much better.
Okay, first-person shooter.
Oh, yeah, keyboard, mouse.
There we go.
All the way, for sure. Yeah, there's nothing that I've used anyway, and I've tried most controller types that comes close to the aiming accuracy without any kind of auto assist turned on. I'm talking like real manual aiming of a mouse. Because a mouse, you can move drastically and have large changes in direction. You can barely move it and have pixel changes. And then you could just pick up your hand and it'll not move at all.
You want to hear the funniest shit I ever saw at a LAN party?
What's that?
This is in the Quake 3 era.
Okay.
There was this guy that kept coming to our LAN parties, and this is in the early 2000s when, you know, the internet online play was not as popular because of lag and everything else, and you actually had LAN parties. Yeah. And I was a member of the LC Web Monks at the time, and I was doing the network admin for our big LAN parties, and we had like 200 people LAN parties, man. I mean, we had different servers running. We had different groups, different playing different games. Anyway, this guy was playing Quake 3, and he was using a fucking trackball.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, why the hell are you doing that? And he goes, because I can do this. And he flicks it and stops and just does a three. He was good enough with that trackball that it just was insane.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because I just ordered a new trackball 2 weeks ago. As an addendum to my controls for gaming on my gaming PC.
Now here's the question. Do you have tracking on your new trackball?
Tracking on my new trackball?
It's like shipping tracking. I was just trying to make a stupid joke.
It's not even funny. The thing about the trackball is, and there's two types. And the one I may order the other type. The one I ordered is traditional middle of the trackball. With a fairly large ball, but you're using kind of your middle fingers.
Oh no, this one was one of the thumb ones.
Right, so that's the second type, is to use the thumb. The reason I went with this one is because the thumb has five different buttons it can reach on this one, as well as a scroll wheel on the thumb. And so I thought, okay, well, let me try this. So I have three buttons on top and plus a trackball, and then five buttons on the left side, plus I guess technically four buttons plus a pressable wheel on the left side. See how that compares. Because I've been using the world's best gaming mouse now for about almost a decade, probably. I've gone through three of them. And when this thing came out, it was over $200. But it is
That's too much for a mouse, man.
It is a professional gaming mouse. It has an OLED display on it. It has like eight buttons, out of which four are pressure sensitive, and different functions can be done by different pressures on the mouse, on the buttons. It has a gyroscope, so for any games where, you know, you're using it normally when you're running around and you get in an airplane or helicopter, you just pick up the mouse about half an inch off the desk, and now the gyroscope is functional, so you can tilt the mouse in whatever direction, just like a joystick. It is a very, very cool mouse in terms of functionality.
So you're one of those guys that when you play a racing game, you actually have the wheel and pedals and all that, right?
I do have a wheel and pedals.
Yeah.
And I have the foot pedals for airplanes, for the rudder. And for space flight sim, I have dual joysticks for 6 degrees of freedom. So I am one of those guys that likes to win when I play, yes. And I'm not going to let technology stand in the way.
Yeah, I'm the guy that had a joystick when I was playing Descent in the 90s. And other than that, man, I enjoyed video games, but it was never that big of a hobby for me.
Sure, that makes sense. And really, honestly, video games became more of a hobby for me pre-marriage and post-divorce.
Yeah.
Like, while I was married, I didn't really play video games as much. Probably still, you know, too much if you ask my ex-wife, but...
You know, it's funny because my video gaming declined, actually, when my wife and I started dating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think that's true of everybody, because you're spending time doing other activities. But my video gaming probably picked up a little bit after about 5-6 years of marriage, because we weren't doing the other activities nearly as much.
I'm not sure what activities you're talking about there, Gene.
Well, there's only two types of activities men engage in, you see. One of them involves using joysticks.
The other involves using the joystick.
Yeah, yeah. One of them is using a joystick, the other one's playing video games. So
that was not the reason for the decline, but okay.
But where I was leading up with this is, have you at least just peripherally seen some of the video game that are, well, some footage, I should say, from video games that are currently available or coming soon, meaning this year, to release? Because literally better than reality at this point. It's better quality fidelity than watching a movie.
Yeah, the graphics are insane. Absolutely.
They've jumped the Rubicon, if you ask me, because they've gone from something that was trying to be realistic to being literally photorealistic. Like, there is no way to discern something that was not video game from some of these games. And I think The Ghost of Kiev was a perfect example of that. Where for literally over a week, a lot of people, including mass media, kept running the story of these incredible feats of flight, which were literally just scenes from a air combat video game.
Yeah, this is the cognitive dissonance that we're in, where people are believing things that are...
But I don't really blame them, because if you look at the quality of the video...
I do, because it's not about the quality of the video. It's about what can really occur in life.
Oh, sure, sure, sure. Yeah.
But, you know, that from Orwell taught us that that's the ultimate end of the state, right? Is to...
Just know that 2 + 2 = 5.
Well, to know something is wrong, but to still believe it because the state said it, right?
Yeah. And in this case, that was literally an example. Now, I'm not sure if the people that released the video with that description were doing it because they were pro-Ukraine, or if they were doing it just because they're on Reddit and wanted to fuck with people, or if they were doing it because they wanted to demonstrate what you just said, which is people are so stupid and gullible that they will believe whatever the mass media messaging is, which, let's face it, even though it's not state-owned, what we have in the U.S. for mass media is a state media.
It might as well be. I mean, there's 7 entities that control the U.S. media.
Yeah, well, now 8 with apparently Ben Shapiro.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the quote from 1984 was, "The party told you to reject the evidence of your eyes and ears, and it was their final, most essential command." There we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and that's, I think, the ideal, and why people are getting kicked off of Twitter is because they are telling you to reject what your eyes are seeing, a man, and simply call that a woman.
Well, or a woman and call it a man, or, you know, the other point that Peterson made with the Sports Illustrated tweet, and people gave him a lot of crap because, you know,
not attractive.
Well, he said that, but she wasn't unattractive. She had symmetrical features. She was a bigger girl, not my type, but whatever. Mm-hmm. Not what I would call ugly.
Mm-hmm.
just, you know, bigger. But what he's pointing out is that being told that that is attractive and that is an ideal to shoot for is the problem. Right. And that there, I agree with him. And this is not to fat shame anyone or to say if you like bigger girls, whatever, man, who cares? But when we're talking about what is the pinnacle of human existence, right? A model on Sports Illustrated or something that's going to be held up as an ideal, then it ought to be an ideal. And that it's a manipulation to do something like that. And that I completely agree with.
Yeah. And I think specifically relating to Sports Illustrated, which was a magazine that was built showcasing fitness.
Exactly.
Like, it wasn't just, hey, look, we have Playboy models, which are just, you know, pretty skinny girls. It's like, no, we have girls that go to the gym. Girls that are toned, where you can see their six packs, not just girls that are within the healthy weight.
Yeah.
And they've completely done a 180 on that to where, again, not to say that necessarily somebody can't be beautiful and fat, but to have fat chicks as the ones that are brought up on the pedestal in lieu of also beautiful women who are also athletic.
Well, in shape. I mean, you don't have to necessarily be hard body athletic, but, you know, I don't know.
This is where I call it fitness, because like there are female bodybuilders and that to me is unattractive. That's beyond the Rubicon, right? It's like they might be perfectly good women, but doesn't do a shit for me.
Well, but the female bodybuilder doesn't do it for me, nor does the, you know, the whole BBW thing.
Yeah, they have a male shape
thing
to their body. They're broad shoulders. You know, it's like if you work out too much and you're a woman, your body starts to look like a man.
Anyway, you know, what
you brought this up, man, not me. This is your.
I brought this.
I remember I've always been a little, I don't know, maybe surprised. I don't know what to even describe, but like I've always known guys, and usually these are the super skinny, tall guys that really like the fat chicks. Like every girlfriend they have is almost like double their weight.
You know, I would cite an example, but he's one of my best friends, so I'm just going to leave it there.
Yeah. Well, but that's my point is we all know people like that, right? We've all known guys that their preference is very Rubenesque. That is the thing.
I had a roommate in college that, you know, said fat chicks are like mopeds. They're fun to ride, but you don't want your friends to see you on one.
Oh my God. Yeah. And I could see, but I think it has more to do with their self-esteem than their actual physical body. That's the other little bit of psycho crap I'll throw out there, because I've met a few fat chicks that have been totally, you know, normal and cool and everything. But most of them get offended at absolutely everything. And that is a psychological defense relating to their self-esteem.
I'll disagree there. So I actually think the one buddy of mine, his now wife, is a total sweetheart and goes well above and beyond and is just, I think it's because of other issues and low self-esteem that she overcompensates in other ways. So there's that aspect.
Well, that's not really disagreeing.
Well, you're saying they get offended by everything, and I would say that this particular person is absolutely
gets offended
the
by nothing.
Other way.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I think that's an exception. I think that's more rare than the typical fat chick. This is a great topic for us. The typical fat chick that is overly offended by most things, and as a result of that, tends to not be courted as much, let's say.
Yeah. So since
it's not even based so much on their body as their attitude. And I've said this for a long time. The most attractive quality a woman has is her smile. Is how does she respond to the rest of the world and the activities that guys like?
So since we're being completely offensive to everyone right now, have you noticed at all these demonstrations post Roe v. Wade?
Oh, the blue and pink hairs. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no risk.
Attractive women.
You're not going to need
being
an abortion.
Pregnant.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
The only risk of getting pregnant they have is if they're at a, you know, a party with a bunch of drunk people at it, male drunk people at the party. And then they're the ones doing the pursuing and trying to hook up. Yeah, I would agree. Look, I've dated a blue hair before. You know, I'm not completely opposed to that as long as other features are good. But the blue hairs definitely have a particular political stance, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you know, it doesn't matter. What it comes down to is, you know, how do I put this? The decision on Roe v. Wade just kicked it back to the states. Let's look at it that way. So most of the places where these protests are going on and everything else, they're not affected by this.
Not going to be affected.
Right.
But let me steel a man their argument though. Okay. Mm-hmm. So their argument, I think, at least for the intelligent ones, would be it's not a question of should this be a state's issue. It's a question that this should not be an issue the government has any business, whether at a state level, city level, or federal level, being involved in, because what I do with my body, and as long as there's something in my body, it is my body, is my choice and nobody else's.
Okay, and I'll still steel man the other side. So does that go up to the 9th month of pregnancy? You're literally crowning and it's still in you so we can kill it?
Yes, yes. And I would say it's not to say that that should be a good decision, but I'm allowed to make bad decisions like drinking alcohol or smoking cigarettes. And there's no reason I shouldn't be allowed to make a bad decision that also is about my body.
Yeah, you're allowed to make bad decisions up until the point it impacts someone else. And that's the crux of the argument, is that there is a point of viability. There is a point of this inarguably a separate entity. For some people, that argument starts at conception. For other people, it's somewhere along the spectrum. From my stance, you know, the question is, when does life begin?
Well,
but regardless, I think if the Democrats in the last decade would have codified Roe into law, saying that up until the point of viability, you know, you have a right to evict, which is the libertarian approach, I don't think this argument would exist today.
Yeah, but until you have a state that is willing to sentence a woman for murder because she fell down the stairs while she was pregnant, then it's a religious, not a political argument.
Well, I mean, there's a difference between an accidental death and manslaughter.
It's negligence. Okay, well, fine. So a state that's willing to sentence a woman to manslaughter for falling down the stairs when she's pregnant.
Well, again, did she slip or was she purposefully negligent? Because that's the difference between manslaughter and an accident. Because of an accident, you're not necessarily going to jail for manslaughter.
Well, but if you accidentally killed somebody else, you would be going to manslaughter. If you're driving a car and a woman who's pregnant,
drunk drives, gets in an accident, no one else was involved, but her baby dies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I thought you wanted to get rid of all laws relating to alcohol.
The why doesn't really matter there, but the gross negligence is the point, you know, and I have a hard time with that. I have a hard time with all these laws because I'll flat out say it. The state is never going to make me live for anyone else. And I have a problem with that. So I get a lot of the sides of the argument here. I'm not such a religious fundamentalist that I just go, oh, well, the baby's life, the baby's life, the baby's life. Well, what about my life? What about other things? There are competing priorities here, and that's what makes this such a hard thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think up until the point of viability, and here's where I land. It's an area that I don't think we need to police morality. I think it's going to happen one way or the other. It's like prostitution. Prostitution is immoral to me, but
it shouldn't be illegal.
Right. It's going to happen no matter what. Now, post-viability, I think the answer should be that, you know, we're going to take the baby. We're going to take it out. You don't have to deal with it anymore. You relinquish all rights and we move on with our lives. That's my answer. I think that's the most moral, but, you know, what can I say?
Well, and I think what you're getting at is, or what you were saying is basically the first part of the quote from Ayn Rand of, "I swear by my life and my love of it that I will never live for the sake of another man, nor ask another man to live for mine." Yeah, and that is something that is a very real moral distinction between people that agree with this sentiment and people who don't.
Well, and you know, again, shockingly enough, I found out one of my coworkers named her daughter Dagny.
Yeah.
So there are more of us out there than you might realize.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it really comes down to, are you an individualist or not? Right.
Yeah.
So those that aren't familiar with it, go read John Galt's speech out of Atlas Shrugged at the very least.
Yeah. And that you could read the speech online. Like, you don't need to buy the book to read the speech. That's fully available in tons of places. But if you haven't ever read the book, I would certainly recommend reading Atlas Shrugged. And I happen to like most of her nonfiction. I kind of find it, you know, better. But she's more famous for the fiction books.
Well, what I'd say is read Anthem. And if you do not like Anthem,
is very short. That's an easy one. Yeah. Yeah.
But if you like Anthem, then, you know, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, do we have anything else that's news relevant and interesting? I know we jumped around as we usually do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a conversation, right? That's all we do. No, maybe, nothing.
At least we're not looking at tweets and just talking about them.
Well, there is that. No, there's not a whole lot else I really care to talk about. Like I said, I've been busy this week, but it's definitely been an interesting week.
Mm-hmm. Did you go out and use your gun, the new one you got? Did you take that out to the range?
Have we not talked about it since then?
We talked about you getting ready to take it, I thought. Maybe we just forgot to talk about it after you took it out.
Yeah, I did take it to the range. I got to put
a few... Did it fail miserably like I predicted?
Not at all. It was a very awesome gun. Now, right. I did have to get used to the SIG sight, so this is my first SIG.
Hmm.
And I'm used to doing a 6 o'clock hold.
Mm-hmm.
And that does not work on SIG sights. You're going to hit low.
That's a tactical hold?
Yep.
Got it.
So it
you can adjust that.
I did. Yeah. Anyway, I adjusted for it.
And so what, 365 or what's the model?
It's a 320 M17.
Okay.
And anyway, so the first magazine I was shooting low. And it's been, mm-hmm. oh shit, man. Since I've really shot a pistol at a range trying, you know, target shooting, it's been 2.5 years. So I was like, Jesus, is it me? Am I this out of practice? I mean, everything was inside the 8 ring, but you know, this is at 25 yards. So 25 yards speed target inside the 8 ring, not terrible. I mean, you know, we're talking under 10 inches, but not where I want to be. And I finally just got the adjustment right and realized it was a tactical hold and dead on dot. And after that, everything was in the 9 and 10. It was great.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit small, and it's got...
Not the M17. The M18 is a little small. The M17 is a full-size pistol. And that's part of the reason why I chose it, is because I want that longer sight picture.
Yeah.
I'm not a subcompact guy. I'm not an easy concealed carry.
Compact guy.
Yeah. Well, regardless, I want a full-size frame. My hands are big enough, and I want the sight picture. So anyway, put 100 rounds through it. That's all I did because the range was closing, but I shot well. Mm. It was fun. Definitely happy with the purchase. Yeah. And, you know, when you look at the 320 and the M17 and the modularity that is brought by that platform, it really is a different pistol platform. I think you ought to look at it.
Have they got a version of that without the safety?
Not in the M17. The 320, they've got plenty of different versions of it without a safety. I personally like a physical safety.
Yeah.
And the reason why is... You know, if I'm out in the woods or out trekking around or doing whatever, now most of your holsters today have good trigger covers and everything else, but that historically hasn't always been the case. And it's just something I grew up on and I trained on and it works for me. So I've got the dexterity to flip that thumb down, and that's just the way I've done it. So, and I hated Glocks. I've never been a Glock guy. So sorry, Josh.
That's funny. Yeah, I've shot tons of Glocks, but I at this point prefer the six, or sorry, the Springfields.
Really, the XDs?
Yeah,
fuck, I can't stand them.
Almost all my Glocks and switched them over to XDs.
I can't stand the XD.
I don't know why, dude. It's a better gun.
Recoil impulse.
Oh, yeah, we did talk about the recoil impulse. Yeah. You don't like the recoil impulse.
Recoil impulse is just the way I do my grip and everything else. The XDs,
shot the XDM. Long barrel in 45.
No, I have not.
Okay, I will bring that when we get together, because I think you're going to like that impulse.
Well, maybe, but mostly
it's very similar to a full size 1911.
Then yeah, I probably will. Most of the XDs I've shot have been in 9mm and 40 cal, and they've been shorter barrels, and they're just real jumpy to me. So follow up shots are just not there.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's my thing, is I need to be able to be high enough up on the gun with my, you know, right hand, my primary hand. Mm-hmm. Need to be able to get high enough. The dovetail on a lot of the XDs with the shorter barrels, I don't feel like I can get as high. And then, mm-hmm. you know, pulling the grip down, it's just, it's different for me. But, you know, everybody likes different things. I also hate a mushy trigger. So mm-hmm. one of the things I really liked about the SIG is there's not a lot of mush. You know, it's mm-hmm. bam right there, good wall. And then the take up, you know, there are other guns that have quicker take ups, but I'll take no mush over a quicker take up personally, because the reality is, if you're in a tactical situation where you're actually using your gun or you're shooting at something, it could be game for that matter. You're not sitting there thinking about it, and the muscle right. memory, it varies so much between guns.
Yeah.
You're not sitting there just riding the take up unless you have one gun that's all you shoot all the time. And you've got the muscle memory down for that take up. Yep. It's not a reality.
Yeah, for follow-up shots, you probably are writing it, but yeah.
Yeah. So again, that's why I'll take a quicker take-up trigger. So
how much are these things going for? I don't even know what that gun is.
$650-ish. No, it's not a cheap gun, but it's not a horribly expensive gun either.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly within the range of Glocks.
Yeah, it comes with three magazines, two 21-rounders, and a 17.
So. And the 21s stick out?
Yeah. 21s are extended.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So,
and it's optic ready if you want to put an optic on it. I've never shot an optic on a pistol.
And that, I was literally going to ask you, given that SIG makes a full line of sights for these things with either hollow or red dots,
mm-hmm.
have you thought about slapping that on there?
Well, I have, but I'm probably looking at the Trigicon if I go that way. Mm-hmm. Some of the, you know, the argument is, so the sights that come on there are great night sights. They've got tritium inserts. It's a great sight picture on mm-hmm. this gun. Part of the reason why I got it. I've never shot an optic on a pistol, so I'm looking to try that out and see how I like it. If this becomes a carry gun for me, then I think I'm more likely to do it, because mm-hmm. an optic for a carry gun makes a lot of sense to me. And the reason why is quicker draw, quicker target. Well, I'm thinking target acquisition in both eyes open.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
And, you know, there are some professionals out there that are espousing the benefits of it. And mm-hmm. when Mikulik puts an optic on his pistols, I kind of take note of that. So,
well, Jerry is a fucking god. That's not a human.
That's what I'm saying. So when he's got an optic on his pistol, that says something to me.
Yeah, but Jerry can do with no optic what I can't do with an optic.
Oh, yeah. He's insane.
Yeah. Have you seen his daughter shoot?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Incredible.
Yeah.
Not quite his level, but incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, his whole body's just basically been rebuilt to shoot fast.
And incredibly accurately.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's just a fun character anyway. Just a very unassuming guy, if you've seen just interviews with him.
Well, just a laid-back character.
Yeah. Just, he's not, you know, you would think he'd be the super competitive type. Not at all.
No, he's just, he's one of those guys that's like, I'm the fucking best in the world. I don't have to compete with anyone. There's no ego here.
Well, I think he's a little more modest than that. But yeah.
Yeah.
He is definitely a guy that I think is a great representation of the sport.
Yeah. Well, I don't own guns for sport, but yeah.
But what he's doing is effectively sport.
Yeah, and I enjoy the sport of shooting. Yeah. Like, you know, going out and shooting clay is challenging. It's fun. Mm. You know, even going to the range and just target shooting is fun.
And it's more fun with your buddies.
You know? Absolutely.
It's fun to go. And there's nothing more fun than...
A dueling tree is one of the best things ever.
Dueling trees are awesome. Than having a woman come out and
wipe everybody's ass.
The shit off the guys. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And this is something that I noticed a long time ago is
women are better natural shots most of the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. Their muscles are made for fine control. They're not made for big, you know, grog see rock, grog pick up rock, grog throw rock. And so they, two people with the same rough level of training, the woman will be a more accurate shot.
Yes.
She'll get tired faster. but she will be a more accurate shot until she gets tired. And the guys are always just pissed off as hell about that. It's like, oh, it's bullshit. But it's generally been the case. And it's not until you really spend a lot of time practicing as a man with a gun that you can consistently surpass the accuracy of women.
Well, I will give one caveat. When you've grown up shooting, well, here's this.
That's called practicing for a long time when you've grown up shooting.
Well, but you can also have a lot of bad habits.
You can. That's true. That's, you know, depends who taught you, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it there's a lot of variability. Mm-hmm. But anyway, dueling trees, for anyone who doesn't know what that is, it's literally you have targets on either side that flip around. So if I hit a target, it flips to Gene's side. He hits a target, it flips to my side. Mm-hmm. And the entire goal is to get all the targets on one side. That's who wins. And man, can that be fun, especially if you've got two fairly equal shooters. It's all who can reload faster, who can get back on target faster. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's just in general a good time. Now, the one thing I will say is that when I started shooting bow and going to the bow range, I realized there's a huge benefit in doing that versus firearms. Well, there's multiple.
Well, your hearing, for one.
Hearing is the main one, right? So it's the idea that I can stand and shoot while having a casual conversation with my buddy who is shooting in the next lane over, and all you hear is a thump, 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 which I think is, you know, it's not ever going to be that quiet even with a really good silencer on your gun, but maybe shooting 22s with silencer might be in that general vicinity of loudness.
I can speak from experience on this. So a buddy of mine had a Walther threaded for suppressor, and we had some fun with it. And 22 subsonics, all you heard was the clack, clack of the action.
That's cool. Yeah, for sure. So I don't know. I think firearms, going to the range, is always fun. It's fun with friends. It's definitely fun with newer people that haven't gone out. It's fun to actually try out your buddy's guns, because you probably have slightly different guns than they do.
Well,
unless they just copy everything you have.
And, you know, rifles, one thing people don't realize, especially if you've got a scope on a rifle, you can't just try out a buddy's gun and it fits you right, right? Because your eye relief, everything's going to be so individualized. And that's the other thing, is if you had a scope mounted on your gun, it's probably mounted wrong, because it's mounted to the guy who mounted it, not to you.
Oh, you mean if you get a gun with a scope mount?
Yeah. Right. If you guns to a gun store and, you know, have the scope thrown on there and, bore sighted in for me and everything else. Well, your eye relief and all that. And as a shooter, if you're doing anything long range, one of the things you want to do is find your comfortable spot, have your cheek comb and pull correct. Yep. And then you want to put the scope where you're comfortable, not put the scope and then try and make yourself comfortable. So it's
absolutely, because unless you're using a red dot sight, where a lot of them have a zero eye relief, but if you're using a normal scope with some magnification, there's absolutely a sweet spot from the distance from your eye to the back lens of that scope. And that sweet spot will be the same length, but your position of your head with the cheek weld in the proper place will vary depending on your body's like. How long are your arms? How tall is your neck?
What's your cheekbone structure?
Yeah. You know, do you have fat, chubby cheeks? Yeah. So you're going to end up having to ideally adjust that scope. And I mean, if you really do it right, you're going to adjust it both up and down and forward and back.
And, you know, and this is one of my big bitches about Vortex optics, even their high-end stuff, which I actually bought a Vortex PST, which is one of their higher-end optics recently for a gun. And it ended up being the best option for this particular gun without going to like a Leopold Mark VI. But my biggest gripe about Vortex is forever and a day, and they still haven't changed this, is the eye box. So I have to spend more time making sure I've got that scope right for me. And the odds of like my dad being able to pick up that gun and shoot it effectively, that eye box is totally off for him. Now, it works because it's my gun. It's what I'm doing with it. And I've got the eye box where I want it. But, you know, that's one of the things that really matters about a scope, especially if multiple people are going to be using the gun, is how big that eye box.
Yeah, absolutely. And a big eye box is always going to be preferable. I can't think of a reason why it wouldn't be.
Well, I mean, you get into cost differences on how the scopes are manufactured and things like that. So that's a thing.
And that is one of the things I've always liked about the ACOGs. is the
well, but that's really a fixed power scope, so yeah, it's easy. Yeah. You know, but so I've always been a variable power scope guy for, you know, pretty much every gun I've ever had has had a Leupold on it at one point in time or another. I'm really sad that Nikon stopped making scopes, because the Nikon scopes were fantastic in so many ways, especially when they started actually producing, you know, so people get into this debate about first or second focal plane. And what I think it is a lot of people who don't shoot enough and they get caught up on, well, oh, you know, if you do second focal planes for blah, 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 blah. Well, it depends. What kind of hold are you doing? How much math are you actually doing? You know, or anyway, to say a second focal plane mil dot scope, which I have a few of them still, is, you know, just trash or whatever. Well, you don't shoot enough and you're not using it the way I'm using it. So, you know, unless I'm making a really long shot and I'm doing calculated wind holds and I've got a spotter and we're talking and everything else, that mil dot is an approximation, an approximate hold for me, where I can see where my shots are hitting and I can follow up with other shots and adjust, not based off of math and me sitting there and running the ballistics equation, but just experience of shooting. So anyway.
Yeah. No, it's, I think this is where it's obviously a lot easier with iron sights, where you don't have to mess around with a lot of these factors.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends on the distance and everything else, you know.
Right. Iron sights are that's the limitation. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. But
all right. Well, I think maybe we should wrap it up. Been going for a while here, and I think we're still working on trying to figure out a schedule to bring Josh in, maybe have a little more history conversation.
Yep, we've got to figure that out and get him on, and I think he'll be a fun addition.
Yeah, yeah, I think it'll be fun to get his perspective on a lot of this stuff. I know he's an avid listener of both of my podcasts, and I appreciate that, Josh, and certainly thanks for the donations you make. You totally don't need to be doing that, but, you know, it's always... It always demonstrates the value for value that people get out of listening to a show.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, with that, we're going to wrap it up. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode, and we'll be back in about a week.
Have a good 4th, Gene.
Oh, yeah. Have a happy 4th of July to you as well. And as always, thanks for joining me. Please do keep in mind that nothing in this podcast represents financial, legal, or medical advice.